Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
When addiction takes control, getting help can change everything. Parkwood Behavioral Health System offers compassionate, evidence-based addiction treatment for adults right here in Mississippi. Take the first step today. Visit parkwoodbhs.com. Healing starts here. With limited exceptions, physicians are not employees or agents of this facility.
Roll free record on my count. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, roll A, fade up on A.
Southern Miss to the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Happy Friday, everybody. Super Talk Eagle Hour back on the air. Whatever Super Talk station you find us, welcome. You find us online, we're glad to have you that way as well. Well, basketball lost last night. We're going to be talking about that later in the show. Also going to hear from the play-by-play voice of the upcoming opponent, James Madison University. That'll be tomorrow afternoon, but the Golden Eagles lose a close one last night, and again, we'll have more on that as the show progresses. Southern Bancorp Studio, that's where we're broadcasting today here in Oak Grove, Mississippi, and as is the case every day, Dickey's Barbecue Pit sponsors the opening segment of our show. All right, we've got a guest in the studio that'll be no stranger to Southern Miss baseball fans. Kirk McCarty was one of the great pitchers in Southern Miss history. Pitched from 2015 through 2017, went on to play for the Cleveland Indians for a number of years, and even played some overseas baseball. And, Kurt, we're happy to have you here, man. Thank you.
Yeah, happy to be here. It's a bit disheartening to be considered a part of history at this point, but I guess I have to accept it. There's nothing I can do about it.
I got to take you back to two moments in your life, and I want you to describe to our listeners what was going on in your head. Let's go back to a rainy Monday night, like around 12 o'clock at night, raining, super regional on the line. Looks like Mississippi State has been handled by the Golden Eagles. You had pitched on hardly any rest, and then I believe Nick Sandlin was pitching, and one of State's big studs is up at the bat, and looks like the game is over. Pop up behind first base into the rainy sky. What happened then, Kurt?
I remember it all too well, unfortunately. You know, it's just one of those that, honestly, you work on a ton early in the season, that trouble triangle in that area behind first base. And depends on who you ask. You ask Dylan, you ask Guidry who should have caught it. But, you know, it's just one of those things. Baseball has a ton of those plays every year. You just hope they come in the fourth inning whenever you're up by eight.
Right.
And not in that moment, but
right.
What a special team that was.
Really was.
What a
fun
year.
50-plus wins, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was – I've been a part of a lot of teams, a lot of good teams, and that one still stands out as probably my favorite.
Yeah, no question. 50-win team that year. 50-plus wins. Unbelievable. So you're drafted by the Indians, and you were telling us before we brought you in the studio that you got called up and you pitched your first game in all of all places, Yankee Stadium. Now – tell us, Kirk, what was going on in your mind when you stepped on the mound and you were in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, it was a really special moment. Fortunately, we had played two more games earlier in the series, and so I had a chance to really kind of take it in, just look around. I was a big Yankee fan growing up, too. I was a Derek Jeter fan. I was always number two in every youth team I was on. Coach Kelly can remember that. I would fight to the death for number two. Just so I could be like Jeter. I was left-handed, so he wouldn't put me at shortstop, which that kind of frustrated me. but what a cool moment it was. I faced Isaiah Kiner-Falefa as my first at-bat. He was kind enough to ground out to third pretty sharply, but let me kind of get my first out, get my feet up under me. Just a special moment. It's hard to put into words. The three-inning outing didn't go as I wanted, but it was still just to realize that dream that I'd had my whole life and took years to get there was super special.
Heck, a dream that probably every kid that ever played Little League Baseball had. I'm going to pitch at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, and to get to do make my debut there was
– pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Well, and going and playing it in the bigs with a former Southern Miss teammate, because Sandlin was an Indian as well.
Yeah, he was on that team. We had a really special moment whenever – we played Minnesota in 22 later in the year. And it was in the middle of a pretty contested playoff run. We were up a couple games on the Twins or vice versa. I really don't remember. But there was a game where Sandlin pitched, I pitched, and we both faced Wallner.
That's too cool.
Yeah, probably the highlight of my brief career in the major leagues was that game. We ended up beating the Twins in 15 innings. I pitched 13, 14, and 15. And I'll take you back 2 weeks prior, me and Wallner are both in AAA. And I threw Wallner a cutter that he hit like 400 miles an hour over the fence in AAA. And so he got to wear that. And probably all of you posted it on Twitter because it went around a little bit, like a Wallner gets McCarty, whatever. But I faced him in the 14th, and I said, no way he's sitting cutter first pitch. First pitch of the inning, threw Wallner a cutter, popped it up, got him out. So he's still in the big leagues. I'm now working a real job.
It's a shame that Sandlin guy didn't materialize. He never could pitch much, could he?
Are we talking the same Sandlin? might have the wrong guy.
Yeah, and on your podcast, Bob, you got to interview Brian Dozier. Was Dozier on the Twins at the time? So there would have been four of you?
Yeah, he was already done. Wasn't there then. But it was super cool to get to share the field with those guys.
Oh, man, it doesn't get any cooler than that. And that's cool for Southern Miss baseball fans, correct?
Oh, yeah. Southern Miss, for the size of it, you wouldn't think it. But we had a lot of guys touch the big leagues that year.
Yeah.
And I think our prospects to have more just keep going up and up with some of those young guys.
Yeah, no question.
And people, you know, when I coach these guys in Little League, people go, oh, you're just this great coach. I said, no, you got McCarty, you got Taylor Braley, Jordan Mitchell, who wound up being a Division I football wide receiver. John Carter Santer pitched a little Division I. You had Guidry right behind you. I mean, the list of talent that just went on and on and on.
We could have got somebody at Corner Market, could have coached that team to a lot of wins.
Is about what they got.
Something's in the water those years.
But when travel ball in those years too, Kirk, you were playing against a Terminators team up in Jacksonville. Jake Mangum was on that team. There were some other big league guys that were out of the Jackson area.
Yeah, we had a special run in that. I guess we're all 30 now of just for whatever reason, really good talent that was coached pretty well and had a passion for the game.
You know, that 2017 team, I mean, you can go back to 16 as well, but I really think that 17 team started this kind of trajectory of Southern Miss baseball. I don't think Southern Miss has missed the tournament since that team, 9 straight regionals. I guess what was it about that team, do you think, that kind of started this amazing run by the past 10 years by the baseball program?
I think I'll take it back one more year. I think I'll give 16 team the credit. In 15, we missed the regional. That was, I think, our last time was 15. And I remember vividly, we were pretty much the first team out in that selection. And it came down to one win, and it was UNO on a Tuesday night. We lost that game to a pretty poor UNO team, low RPI. Ironically, my first career start, so it always stuck with me. I bore a lot of responsibility for that because I didn't pitch all that well. But I think the feeling of 15 and the core group of guys that carried over to 16, we really kind of – I wouldn't say change the trajectory because I think Southern Miss has had a history of being really good. I mean, you take it back to 09 in the College World Series, but we kind of restarted it maybe in 16, just with a different mindset that we didn't want to experience that feeling again. And a credit to all the guys that have come after us and really carried that on. And wow, the momentum is just, it's incredible.
You mentioned 16 there being the first team out. And you mentioned how it kind of started the trajectory, but like you said, past you guys, 18, 19, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, seeming like Southern Miss baseball has just gotten better, even better since that year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think there's one – they've got the right blueprint. Coach Barry was there and led in such a strong way, and that's what everybody pulled off of was strong leadership at the top. We were able to retain him for so long as he wanted to be there, and then he passed it on to another great coach in Coach Oz. And I think that really – If other all sports teams, other universities could see that, it's just all about continual leadership, guys feeding into the same program, and it's been really fun to experience.
I think for a lot of fans, there was a time even back then, maybe in the 15, 16, 17 years, when you lose players like yourself or Matt Wallner, all these other players, you know, there was a chance like, oh, I don't know if we can ever replace him. And now it seems like, you know, they lost Ozzie Pratt and shortstop, Nick Monastir. oh, they'll be fine. They're just going to reload right there, and that's a testament to that program.
Yeah, it's super cool to see that from a school that doesn't, of our size, normally doesn't get that credit to just be able to kind of become that pipeline that funnels over and over. So hats off to them. They've done such a good job.
Yeah, no question. You can see it this year in the preseason national love the program is getting. The program, I think, has has been established now in the minds of the national media as a perennial power, as one of the baseball powers in the country. Fair to say?
Oh, I think absolutely.
Yeah. Can you stick around a little while?
Absolutely, yeah.
I want to talk to Kirk as well about this legislation that's in the Mississippi House about NIL money for high school students. You seem to have an opinion on that.
I got an opinion on most things.
Kirk McCarty in the studio with us. Still to come, we'll be talking to the play-by-play gentleman from James Madison, Kelly.
Yeah, Dave Riggert. They got a big win last night at Troy. And unfortunately, JMU's playing very well right now, and our Eagles maybe not so well.
And the Eagles are struggling.
This means we can ask him about the Bad Bunny halftime show, since he says he has an opinion on everything.
Oh, yes. Well, that'll be next. And Kirk is going to reveal, has Kelly always worn the feminine attire that we see him in now?
Speaking of Bad Bunny. Right?
Big news from Robinson Electric Supply in Laurel. We've moved. You'll now find us directly behind our old building, right by Sawmill Animal Hospital. We're still your trusted electrical distributor, carrying everything from conduit to tape. And don't forget our full line of Milwaukee tools. Whether you're a contractor or a DIY pro, stop by the new Robinson Electric Supply at 1222 West 6th Street and see what's lighting up Laurel. Robinson Electric Supply. New location, same trusted service.
Southern Miss to the top. To the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Eagle Tire West sponsors this segment of the Super Talk Eagle Hour. Former USM pitcher Matt Warren and his staff invite you to see him for premium Goodyear products. Full service auto and truck service is all at Eagle Tire West, next to Smith Motor Company, Highway 98 West in Hattiesburg. Family operated since 1985. And our friends at Forest Health remind you that following your favorite team is fun, but it's a new year, and you got to take care of the most important player on the squad. That's you. Get an annual physical, exercise, eat right, stay close to your doctor, be sure your health is as good as it can be. Forest Health can help you with expert medical care closer to home. Still to come, Dave Rickert from James Madison. But, Kelly, let's continue our conversation with former Golden Eagle star Kirk McCarty.
Yeah, Kirk, having played in the bigs, I want to ask you about the big complaint now that Major League Baseball fans have is that the Dodgers are literally buying championships. Now, now 1 through 7 in their batting order are going to be all-stars, probably already had the best pitching staff in Major League Baseball. So, okay, why not a salary cap when all the other major sports – have salary caps, and you don't think that Major League Baseball players will go for a cap?
Yeah, I don't. I don't think they will, because I don't think they'll have to. They've got a really, really strong union. I was only a part of it for a brief time, but really tried to understand it and experience the delayed spring training in 22, which was another CBA dispute. I don't know that the owners have anything to offer on the downside for the players to give that up. Right now, they're making money hand over fist, and the owners have continued to find creative ways to pay it. You look at the Dodgers, they're funding it mostly with deferred contracts. And I just don't see the leverage that the owners have, and I think the players are willing to hold out on them, lock out in 27.
And if there's a lockout next year, which more and more people are starting to believe that will be the case, the general public rarely sides with the players. But you don't think that will have much sway if it comes to that?
Yeah, it'll have a small impact, but I just have seen too many things where the guys who hold the weight in the room, the loudest voices, are just saying that salary cap is a non-starter for us. We'll find a different way, but it's a non-starter.
only sport, right? Other than college athletics.
Yes, which you're getting ready to talk about high school athletics.
Yeah, Kirk, right? I want to ask you about some. Kirk is a member of the state legislature.
His brother.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ken.
His brother. I want to ask you about a bill that's in the state house. It was introduced by a guy named Jeffrey Harness. And basically, it's a bill to introduce NIL payments to high school athletes. Now, you certainly were the caliber of high school athlete that had that existed, you would have been on that list, no doubt. But what's your thought about that?
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the bill, so I'll preface with that. But on the thought of should high school kids be paid to play, I think it's a pretty simple answer that seems a bit reckless. The beauty of high school sports is the fact that it's all, it'll obviously lead to recruiting and players moving and chasing dollars at we're talking 15 years old. I don't think that makes a ton of sense. The beauty of high school sports, the beauty of what it was so great to win at Oak Grove was the fact that I did it with my teammates that played with me at 9 when we were being coached over here by Coach Kelly. I think we would lose a lot of what makes high school sports so amazing, and we'd also put these kids in such a vulnerable spot that they might like the idea of it, but what comes of it is ugly.
But that's the same argument that people said about college athletics, the purity of college athletics.
I was very adamant whenever I was in a clubhouse at the time, and everybody's opinionated in a clubhouse. And I remember sitting with guys whenever the NCAA took it from the most restrictive organization out there. You know, we were laughing earlier about Coach Barry telling us that we couldn't take a free meal at Qdoba. And if we got it, we had to.
Can you do the impression again? It was just so good.
I could
do it one more time.
I don't know if I should do that.
It was pretty good, though.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was done in good faith.
Of course.
But they went from so restrictive to this NIL deal that was just like, open the floodgates. It's the wild, wild west. And I think we've spent that time trying to figure it out. I mean, they're still figuring out on the fly how NIL really works. No one really knows. And I was very strongly opinionated at the time that what we should be doing for college athletes, you can't work. It's impossible to have a job as a college athlete. I thought what we should be doing when we opened it up to get paid is pretty much pay them a livable wage for the fact that they can't earn one. Now, we didn't get that. And you certainly cannot put the cat in the back in the bag. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
But one of the things that Southern Miss is doing through the collective is taking away some of the vulnerability, even of financially uneducated athletes in college, is that if they're going to receive NIL payments, they have to take some responsibility on their end to protect that investment to a degree. Pick it up from there,
yeah,
Kurt.
Yeah, Peter and I actually started talking right whenever we got back, and Peter's worked hard with the collective to help all the sports teams at Southern Miss, and one of the things was that these kids are getting money, some nominal amount, some just a little bit, but for the first time in their life, and there's no guardrails. A lot of the money comes pre-tax, and these kids don't know, well, is this all mine? Am I going to owe a bill later? And so what they've done at the collective, and they're trying to work on is if you take funds from the collective, one of the prerequisites is that you'll have to have a relationship with the financial advisor and a CPA, and that I couldn't be more on board with. I think it makes total sense. I think we would be doing kids a disservice to not have those services for them lined up before they're going to take any money.
And you're actually a financial advisor yourself now, as you've worked out of baseball into that. Before we let you go, Keller Bradford has a situation with his family, and we want to tell us more, and then how people can help their situation.
Yeah, definitely. Keller's one of my closest friends. He played at Southern Miss. His dad played at Southern Miss, and Keller was one of the pitching coaches at Southern Miss as recent as last year. He's moved on to Liberty now, but still very much a part of the Southern Miss family. His son, Case, who just turned one a week ago, was recently diagnosed with a brain tumor, ATRT. And the Southern Miss staff has done such a great job of putting out awareness of that, but also has a fundraiser that's still live, that'll stay live through the first pitch banquet tomorrow night. If you're called to donate to that, they are at St. Jude, so a lot of their expenses are covered there, but Keller is back at work at Liberty and is having to travel back and forth as much as he can to be there with his wife and to be there with his son. So That fundraiser is still live. We've had a ton of great support for that, and I've spoken to Keller, and he's so appreciative.
It certainly puts everything in perspective.
No, absolutely.
Our prayers for Keller and his family.
And Kirk, you and Erica have a son on the way. Blessings and prayers that everything goes well there. What type of sports parent are you going to be?
Oh, man.
Now, Kate's already, she's three now?
My little girl's three. I don't know much about women's sports and how I'll be in that. But I'm hoping she plays some golf. I like golf. I put her on a golf course, let her hit a 5-foot putt, first putt ever. She made it. I thought, I've got Tigerette Woods here. This is going to be amazing.
She's
three, Kirk.
Yeah, she's three. I took her back to the golf course just to have some fun daddy-daughter time. I gave her the putter. And she turned around and hit the ball into the bunker and then played in the sand for the next hour. So we're still 50-50.
Yeah,
but
there we go.
I think the best sports parents are the ones that are able to step back, see what we're doing for what it is. You really are not making a big leaguer at age 6, 7, 8, 9. What you should be doing, though, is teaching kids how to fail, teaching kids how to work, and teaching kids the fruits of their labor if they'll continue to work over a long period of time.
Kirk, I've never interviewed, and I've interviewed a lot of college baseball players, I have never interviewed one that doesn't say that, that sports teach you how to lose.
Yeah.
Baseball, and I learned this from Coach Barry, he told me baseball was a game of failure, mm-hmm. and you had to learn how to overcome the failures and play against the game and not your opponents. You still believe that?
Oh, 100%. It's a battle. It's an internal battle every day on trying to get through the peaks and the valleys of playing baseball. And I'll say this, too. I lived on the coast for a while, was involved in the youth sports, and was a bit discouraged by the end of it. But as I moved back to Hattiesburg, I carried that same thought process if I have a son, I'm excited, but I'm not thrilled to have to go through what comes in youth sports. And what I've learned being here is that the dads that have stayed in Hattiesburg – and are largely in charge of a lot of the baseball teams here, do an excellent job. And that's a testament to them and all those guys that are involved in the travel teams and even in the Optimus Park. It seems like Hattiesburg is standing out as one of the few that have taken baseball back to what it should be for kids.
And when people coach youth travel ball, whether it be baseball, softball, whatever sport, people have never been involved don't realize how much time and sacrifice that requires.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I was fortunate enough to have a lot of really good coaches in my youth years that their teaching of the game probably had a small impact on my ability to play for a long time. But their teaching of how to fail and how to work towards things and how to carry yourself really had a large impact.
And then there was Kelly.
No, but I was never good enough to play at that level, so I learned failure from dating.
You're still learning.
Oh, yes.
You're probably the foremost expert in Hattiesburg.
A work in progress.
You know, one of my favorite stories that I mention to Coach Kelly every time we get together was of his time pitching where his pitching coach came. I'll give you the bridge version, but his pitching coach came out and pretty much said after a long inning, he said, "Well, Kelly, are you tired?" "No, Coach, I'm all right." He said, "Well, your outfielders are. Give me the ball."
They were exhausted.
Kirk, thank you, man. Delightful. Delightful having you here. Really, really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back, we'll preview the James Madison game with their play-by-play announcer, Jabe Riggert. Stay with us.
Southern Miss to the top.
This segment of the Eagle Hour brought to you by DBAT, softball and baseball training. It might be cold outside, it might be rainy outside, but it doesn't matter as you get your youngster ready to go for the upcoming travel season. Softball and baseball training at D1, we're glad to have them with us here on the program. Well, look out for James Madison. They come into Hattiesburg for a game tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock against the Golden Eagles. And joining us now on the Eagle Hour is the radio voice of the Dukes. He is with us. Actually, they're coming off of a big win Dave Riggert joins us after the big win at Troy. And Dave, you guys have got to be kind of grinning like show dogs after going into Troy and knocking them off.
That's a big win for this team. There's no doubt about it. And they finally got a little momentum. They beat Texas State pretty handily on Saturday this past weekend and really kind of had their most consistent game. That's the one thing we've talked about with this team really the entire year is there's a ton of potential, but it's in spurts. And you see it, and it's just like, wow, if they could play for 40 minutes like that, this team could be really good. They've got a lot of pieces that kind of fit together. And it's a pretty new basketball team. Only two guys are back from last year's team and one starter. So they're kind of trying to figure it out. And in this day and age of college basketball, as you guys well know at Southern Miss, the faces change, the names change every single year. And so they're still trying to figure this team out, but they've been more consistent the last two games. Last night was a big, big win for them. They were able to go into Troy and really kind of control the tempo. They played great defense. And when they play defense, all of a sudden that gets their offense in some rhythm. They're not a team that wants to go real up-tempo. They controlled the pace last night. They held Troy to 36% shooting, and they're one of the best shooting teams in the Sun Belt, just 27% from three. So when they lock in defensively and they apply the scout, this team's they've had a hard time applying this scout. They've done great things in practice, and it doesn't transfer over to the game. And last night and against Texas State on Saturday, they've done that. So I think they're starting to hit their stride. I feel like this is a team that has – last year's team was 3-4, and then they won 10 consecutive games and shared a piece of the regular season championship. Can this team do that? I don't know yet, but they're on their way of becoming more consistent and maybe putting a run together. And I think the game with Southern Miss is huge for the Dukes, because if they can win that game, then they have four in a row at home. So then maybe they can reel off a few in a row. This was their first time they've won back-to-back games since early December. So it's been kind of hit and miss with this club, but it does seem like they're playing their best basketball right now.
But I totally get the win against Texas State, because that was on your home floor. But to go into Troy and do what you did, that has to be especially optimistic. But have they kicked it into gear too late, or are they right where they want to be, your perception, Dave?
It's probably I don't know that they're right where they want to be. It's probably a little too late. With six losses, you're probably not going to have a chance to go win the Sun Belt regular season. So, you know, they certainly have that as a goal every year, and after getting a share of it last year, it's probably too late. But I don't think it's too late. When you look at the standings, and I know you guys have done that, and it's a jumbled mess, honestly. Troy was by far the best team until last night, but now they've come back to the pack a little bit with two losses. But prior to that, everybody has at least three losses. And JMU was tied for, I think, 12th going into the game last night, but they were only three games out of second. So I think if they can string some together, I don't think it's too late to make a run, to make your path easier in Pensacola. And that's the goal right now. You don't want to have to play six or seven games. It's not possible to win that many in a row if you're a 10 or lower seed. If they can get to five or six and maybe have to play four as opposed to even five or six, I think as many games as you can knock off by winning regular season games to not have to play in Pensacola, I think is enormous with the way that structure is set right now. So it's probably too late to win a championship, but I don't think it's too late to climb up the standings and be in a pretty good spot when it's all said and done.
Yeah, you just have to win a tournament, not necessarily the regular season title, but that tournament. And I think you guys are probably going to want – but what you just mentioned is the storyline for about eight or nine teams
this
league, as you mentioned. So where the Dukes have been on an upward arc, the Eagles on kind of a downward trend at this point, that with all due respect, they hope to get turned around tomorrow. But you talked about there are pieces of this JMU team that are really starting to come together. Who are some of the names that we need to look for tomorrow at Reed Green Coliseum when they tip it off at 2?
Well, one guy that is pretty familiar with Sun Belt fans is Brad Douglas. Bradley played at Georgia Southern a year ago, and now he's with the Dukes. And he's been a little hit and miss. He's coming off the bench now. That's more of his role. He had that role at Georgia Southern. He had that role at Little Rock. He had that role at junior college. So he's always been kind of a sixth man. He was a starting point guard for the first 17 games of the season, and he was having a little bit of a struggle. He was in a little bit of a lull. So Kosei Egbule, who is a walk-on that they got late in the recruiting process last summer, has been starting the last four games, and he's done an admirable job. But Brad still plays about 30 minutes per game. He had all 14 of his points last night in the second half, and he kind of runs the show. When he plays well, this team plays well, and he's a guy that really can kind of dictate the tempo. If he doesn't turn the ball over, that's an issue that he's had at times this year. If he doesn't turn it over, then he gets the guys into what they need to get into. But Their best player is Justin McBride, and he's going to be a game-time decision tomorrow. He got hurt in the game last night against Troy and did not play in the second half. He hurt his ankle. They're going through practice right now, and he's doing some light things, so we'll see how the ankle responds to some treatment and everything like that. It's not season-ending, so we'll see if he can go tomorrow night. I think it'll be tough for him to go tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon. We'll see if that happens or not, but he's a difference maker. He's a first-team all-conference guy when he's right. And last week, he averaged 24 points per game in the two games at home. The two games on the road prior to that, he struggled at Marshall and App. But sometimes it's as he goes, this team goes. And they struggled on the road with those games. When he struggled, he played well last week, and the team played better. So Justin McBride is their best player, there's no doubt. And he was averaging about 17 going into last night's game, about 6 rebounds. But two guys that are starting to make their presence felt a little bit more now are two freshmen. Preston Fowler played at Brewster Academy up in the Northeast, and he's from Connecticut. Christian Brown's a kid from Franklin, Tennessee, both very highly recruited. Preston Fowler was a 4-star kid, Christian a 3-star kid, and both those guys are kind of finding a niche now. Christian Brown had 13 rebounds in the game on Saturday against Texas State. Again, he's having about 4 or 5 points per game, but he had 9 rebounds, 3 blocks against Texas State, 13 more rebounds last night, does a lot of the dirty work, and Preston Fowler's a guy that can really shoot the basketball. So those are some of the pieces that are starting to be a little bit more consistent now as freshmen. Again, it was kind of hit and miss during the non-conference portion of the schedule, but those are the guys kind of leading the way right now. And then I think the X factor for this team is probably Eddie Ricks. He's the one starter back from last year's team now coming off the bench. He stepped up in Justin McBride's absence in the second half last night and had 12 points and 10 rebounds, a couple of assists as well. So he stepped up. If they can get that Eddie Ricks, this is a really good basketball team. But again, just like the rest of the team, it's been very inconsistent with what they get night in and night out from a lot of individuals.
Yeah, but there's a lot of bad math going on here because you talked about how well the Dukes are playing defense and Southern Miss, the weakest three-point shooting team in the league. That's not good math on our end. When did the defensive switch get flipped, Dave, with the Dukes?
You know, it probably happened on that trip when they went to App and Marshall. Didn't win the games, but I thought their defense was solid. And then they came back home, and they're playing a little bit more zone now. It's more of a matchup where sometimes you can't even really tell it's a zone. It's just kind of a matchup zone that looks like a man-to-man. But they've done a much better job of rebounding the basketball. That rebound on Troy last night by 12, and that's a team that's usually +4 in Sunbelt games. And they dominate the glass almost every time out. And the Dukes dominated the glass last night against Troy. So the one thing they've struggled with is giving up offensive rebounds and some transition. When they get set in their half-court defense, I think they're as good as anybody in the league. And that's the key for them. They've got to rebound the basketball, not let people get out in transition, and they've got to really just be able to set up their defense. When they do that, it's a really good basketball team on the defensive side. And they're very versatile. They can switch 1 through 4 most of the time, sometimes 1 through 5 when Christian Brown is out there, who I talked about. So that's one thing they've adjusted to early in the season. They couldn't stop the straight line drive. They couldn't stay in front of their man. So then they did a lot of switching. They were trying to hedge a lot of ball screens and different things like that. But the last 2 or 3 weeks, they've switched almost everything. That's been better, just keeping guys in front of them. They're not a team that's going to steal or turn teams over a lot, but they're going to make it hard on you. But one of the things that Coach Spradlin always talks about is field goal percentage defense. That's the biggest stat for him. It's not turnovers forced. It's not steals. It's field goal percentage defense. And right now they're doing a really good job in their overall field goal percentage defense and their three-point field goal percentage defense, which, is you mentioned, that's been a struggle so far for Southern Miss.
When we've asked your colleagues across the Sun Belt who do play-by-play for respective teams at times throughout this season who they thought was the best team at that moment in the league, earlier in the season, Arkansas State was kind of the consensus. Then Georgia mm-hmm. Southern had a little bit of a run. And now Troy seems to kind of be the sexy flavor, but you guys beat him last night. If I asked you that right now, Dave, which speaks to the parity in the league, who's the best basketball team in this conference right now?
You know, this may sound weird, but I still think it's Troy. I do. I think they've got the most talent. They've retained the most guys. Their top guys are all players that were essentially role players on this team a year ago that won the championship in Pensacola and went to the NCAA tournament. So I think they've got the best team. I really do. we saw Arkansas State on the road and got a win there too. That's the crazy thing about JMU. They've lost two home games, which they probably shouldn't have lost, but then they went to Arkansas State and won. They went to Troy and won, two of the harder places to win in the league, and they have wins despite being 3-9 overall this season on the road. So again, that's why this team is kind of a mystery, so to speak, but hopefully they're more consistent. But I still think Troy's the best team. They didn't have their best night, and I think JMU had something to do with that last night. But I do think Troy's the best team. I think they've got the best pieces. I think they've got a couple really tough matchups. I mentioned they rebound the basketball well. Defensively, they're still really, really good. And I think Troy's the best overall team when they play their best.
All right, Dave, we thank you for your expertise and your input. We look forward to how much the check is going to be that Kurt Cignetti is going to write to the athletic department. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Best wishes, best of luck for the rest of the way.
Thanks, Kelly. I appreciate it. Anytime.
All right. Dave Ringert, the radio voice of James Madison, and we'll have news and notes with Dima Mixon and wrap up this Friday edition of the Eagle Hour when we return in a moment.
Big news from Robinson Electric Supply in Laurel. We've moved. You'll now find us directly behind our old building, right by Sawmill Animal Hospital. We're still your trusted electrical distributor, carrying everything from conduit to tape. And don't forget our full line of Milwaukee tools. Whether you're a contractor or a DIY pro, stop by the new Robinson Electric Supply at 1222 West 6th Street and see what's lighting up Laurel. Robinson Electric Supply. New location, same trusted service.
The Eagle Hour, Southern Miss to the top.
I came to the sad realization today that there's no NFL football this weekend, so I may work on my house. Kelly, would you have an idea of where I might go?
Well, especially if you're in the market for Mardi Gras decorations, MCS Home Center has those too as we head into the Mardi Gras season now. But MCS Home Center, Bob, has everything.
They do.
That you need, whether you're working on the inside of your home, the outside of your home, or like me, hiring somebody to do it.
I knew it was coming. I was just like, you've never done any of those things in your life.
No. 7329 Old Highway 98. Well, not Old Highway, but Highway 98 West, just past the 589 interchange. Big supporters of Southern Miss Athletics and local folks wanting to help you.
And Hank Lott and his family are just incredible, incredibly good people. Hey, as is, Genesis of Hattiesburg had a great visit last night with Mr. Grubbs at basketball. Really appreciate all they do. Genesis sedans and SUVs, all from Mississippi's exclusive showroom, Highway 98 West. And I'm going to have to make a stop this weekend at this client. I'm in the mood for some beignets, Kelly. You know anything about those?
Yes. You look at my waistline and know a lot about those beignets.
But they are fresh and cooked when you order them, and they're delicious. I think that'll be a good Friday night treat.
And with the Kairos Mardi Gras parade coming up a week from tomorrow.
Right.
Be a good way to start your Saturday morning.
All right, basketball was in action last night. News and notes with our man Dima Mixon.
Dima?
Sorry, I was headed to my tea time. My bad. No, just kidding. Yeah, so the Miss, of course, as we already covered in the beginning of the show, dropped their fifth game in a row to App State at home last night. Kind of just went exactly how we covered it yesterday. You know, it's App State, one of the best best shooting defensive teams in the Sun Belt. Southern Miss, once again, just can't hit anything from beyond the arc. It is not a good outlook on basketball right now, guys. If we're being completely honest, there's some serious questions, I think, that now have to be raised. And, of course, you know, they have a game at home against James Madison tomorrow.
Who beat Troy
last night on the road, we might add. And it's not a good outlook for men's basketball right now at all. Obviously, they were 11-7, first in place in the league, and now they're 11-12, 11th place in the league. So,
and what did they shoot? 18% last night?
17% from the 3-point line.
17%.
It is. I was at the game. It's frustrating to watch them try to hit 3-point shots. And Dima, I told you off air, I mean, some of them aren't close.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's how I would defend Southern Miss. You know, stack up the box, and if they hit the three, great, you know, whatever. But we're just going to let them shoot it because they just haven't proven that they've been able to hit them at all.
And Dave Ringert pretty much just said, if you're, you know, that last segment, that he said, we don't even mind telling you how we're going to play Southern Miss.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Dima just said.
Well, that's coaching.
Right.
Force them to make the three-point shot.
And then if they start making it, then you can come out and defend them. Like, it's not like you just sit there and let them shoot the whole game if they're drilling all of them.
And we've talked about, you know, the men's struggles, but the women have got to get back on the saddle too here.
Yeah, they do. I mean, of course, they did lose on Wednesday night to Georgia Southern, but it was a respectable loss to one of the better teams in the league.
And they battled back.
They almost made that a real interesting game. They did make it an interesting game at the end, but almost came away with the win there, almost stole that win on the road. They head to Old Dominion tomorrow for a 12 noon tip-off up there in Norfolk, Virginia. That game was moved back due to the winter weather continuing to affect the area up north. So it's going to be interesting to see them play on the road. Old Dominion, not a really good basketball team, not a great women's team. So hopefully Southern Miss could get a road victory there and get back on the right track before they come home. I think they only have one or two more games at home, the women do, because most of the rest of their schedule is on the road.
So let me ask a dumb question. We'll start with you, Kelly. This a must win tomorrow for the men?
Yes, because I mean, we've talked ad nauseum, we've talked about being one of the top six or seven seeds in the tournament. If you're eighth or led, you can just forget it. From a fatigue standpoint, you just cannot win a postseason tournament having to play that many games in a row. And now the good news is, if there is any good news at this point for men's basketball, is that nobody's running away and hiding. Right. We thought that Troy was head and shoulders better than anybody, but Dave Riggert said James Madison and then played a beautiful defensive game last night and beat Troy at Troy and beat him pretty handily. So there's still room for some hope, but very little room for error.
Must win?
I don't know if I'm there right now, just because I don't believe this team has what it takes to win the conference championship. So if we're talking about must win as far as tournament seeding, I think at the end of the day, it really is not going to matter. Right now, you're just trying to get confidence in your locker room. You know, maybe it's a must win in that scenario, but there's no confidence in the men's basketball program. They, at times, and you'd mentioned it, just kind of their physical presence on the court,
body language,
engaged body language, right? And that to me is concerning. Like I said, it's one thing to lose on the road, but to lose in ways like that on your home floor says a lot.
Yeah, and they just, they had no answers the last 5 minutes.
And I did notice last night, too, to underscore that, the body language, they looked defeated.
Late in the game.
Yes, they looked like they had given up, at least in that game.
And once again, that's something to say for it, to being on the road, but that in your home gym, it's concerning. And I think part of that is the crowd that was there wasn't very great, you know, all those things. But it's just part of it.
All right, big week next week, opening softball week. We're going to give a lot of love to the softball team. Kelly did a great job yesterday, interview with four players and the coach. I'm going to be doing some baseball interviews this week because that's 2 weeks away. And, of course, we'll continue to follow basketball and everything that is Southern Miss.
Mark Etheridge with D1 Baseball on the show Monday. So looking forward to hear from him. Kind of a regional aspect for Southern Miss baseball and, of course, talking about the Sun Belt a whole and why Troy will be in the College World Series.
Oh, come on. Is that a joke?
Bob, we got to go.
Southern Miss.
To the top. To the sea.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.